The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. And check out Dr. Oz and Dr. Roizen's website, youbeauty.com. Here are Joe Galewski, Dr. Deb Lonser, and of course, Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
Hi, welcome to the Passionate Radio Show that helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. It's you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen. He's the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. You heard me. I'm Joe Galewski. Dr. Deb Lonser is a pediatrician, also one of our experts, not here today. Thank you for joining us anyway to reach the program anytime on the phone. It's 877-711-5211 or email udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. Dr. Mike, how are things?
They're excellent. Great set of news stories this week. If you look at it, exercise, beating mental activity and preserving cognition. Omega-3s boosting cognitive performance even in 22-year-olds. Eating at fast food, full-service restaurants increases calorie intake. We're going to talk to Brian Wansick about how we can use the food marketing talents to market healthier food and smaller portions. And, of course, Gary Ginsberg has the best of the week. Aspartame, that's the stuff in diet soda now, is linked to leukemia and lymphoma in a new landmark study. What's it mean? How good is the data? Does this mean you should change your habit if you're drinking as many diet sodas as I did? In the last half hour, we don't have Arthur Perry with us today, but we're going to do a top 10 innovations from the Cleveland Clinic.
Yeah, Dr. Perry's in the war zone, so to speak, after Hurricane Sandy, right?
Absolutely. He did get power back today, but his phone is intermittent and his internet is intermittent.
What do you think about canceling the New York City Marathon? I think that was a good thing to do.
Me too.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you've got all those resources, and Staten Island is a disaster, right? And
right.
Those resources, I think Staten Island is where they start the thing. Those resources can be used to help the people on Staten Island much more than needed for the runners. Maybe if it was next weekend, I would have kept it on just to show that New York's back. Remember, they did that, I think, with the World Series after 9/11. And I think that made a huge difference in New York and the psyche of New York.
Well, some of those boroughs are still messy with, even if not water, mud and sand and everything. Number one. Number two, Governor Cuomo was complaining or saying these people don't have enough water, you know, drinkable water, usable water. Yet if you watch a marathon, you see these runners grab a bottle of water, drink a couple swigs and throw it out. How many wasted bottles of water are there? Thousands upon thousands of bottled water that's just being thrown away. And did you see the list of food available for runners after the race? It's a food orgy. I mean,
we should make it a food orgy for the people on Staten
exactly,
Island.
Exactly.
So I think his canceling it was a very smart thing. I think his idea to keep it going, if at all possible, to show people that New York was back was also a good idea. And he realized how impossible that was. He changed. So, you know, the guy, I got to tell you, if Bloomberg was running for president, I don't care what party, what affiliation, I would vote for him in a million.
Yeah, but he wanted the marathon to run initially, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
He should have said right away, no New York City marathon until we straighten this thing out. I mean, but it's such a cash cow. It's such a revenue generator for the city that that's the first thing they think about. They think about the revenue coming in. But come on now. I mean, right away, your humanitarian side has to kick in and say, This is probably one of the biggest disasters ever in the history of that area. You can't even think about conducting an event 4 or 5 days after something like that, you know, the impact it had on that area. That was crazy. They should have never even given it a second thought.
I agree, especially because people come from all over the country to
yeah.
run in it, that
right.
with traveling, even as complicated as it is in New York right now,
right.
you would think that that would have been a consideration.
So, Dr. Mike, how do you handle, I mean, thank goodness we were spared that for some reason here in central New York, we were spared, we didn't get any of that. I can't I can't visualize, I can't comprehend the destruction and what these people are going through. How does one handle that physical and mental anxiety that these people are going through right now?
Well, in fact, it's the same as having post-traumatic stress. There is a stress syndrome here, and what you have to do is to get help. So you have to both do as much as you can physically, that is, start the repair system, get physically active in doing repairs and rebuilding your life. Don't think about it. And then do meditate, learn how to meditate. And, you know, the meditation tapes, there are a bunch of free services on the internet. If they don't have internet, as soon as you can get it, you should learn how to do it. But in fact, we should learn how to do this before an event like this happens so we can tolerate events like this more. The other thing is, you know, when we lived in California, we would have, my wife and I would have a day a year where we would turn off the gas, the electricity, and pretend that an earthquake had happened. We were only doing it for one day a year. But it did teach you, we had, you know, 30 days of water. It was unbelievable. 300 gallons of water for a family of four we had stored. Mm. And probably had all the phthalates and BPA in it as possible, because a lot of it was stored in plastic bottles so that if the house fell down, all the glass bottles of water wouldn't break. But it was in bottles spread in three different locations in our house, or under our house, or in our house. We had flashlights, you had camp stoves with propane tanks, etc. And the first time we did it, you actually do it, it's dark, and you don't know if you're going to make it, so to speak, and get down the stairs safely, etc. And we had flashlights to try and help, and then we had forgotten a can opener. So we had all the food. So we learned how to, but by doing it over and over again, you get much better at surviving a disaster like this. But now it gets cold in New York.
Exactly.
And
it's getting
cold. And so that's really, you know, if you don't have, going without heat and electricity for a few days, you can do that. But longer, you know, it's already into the time when you need sewage and heat and electricity. And I think the intelligent thing is, make sure you have some friends who live about 100 miles away from you, and then another group that live about 300 miles away, so you can always go to your friends no matter what. So you always have friends to go to, and there are shelters and other things. But, that's the one thing you've got to be able to do is to get out of Dodge and go to safer places until you can come back and start the rebuilding process with power, gas, and water.
These people can't get a break, number one, what they're going through now. The temperatures for this area of the country this week, all week, are going to be 10 degrees below normal. You've got the colder weather coming in, and this weekend is daylight saving time. So it gets darker an hour earlier, so that's another extra hour of darkness. It's the anxiety and just being hit over the head with this from so many angles. It's got to be difficult. It's unimaginable that what these people are going through right now.
Well, that's right. We had, when we were in Chicago with one storm, we didn't have gas or electricity for 7 days, and that was on right around Christmas. It was the week before Christmas, as I remember going through it, and it got really cold. We were able to build. You know, we had enough logs and fireplaces that we kept the house warm, thanks to my father-in-law. Kept the house about 55 or above the whole time. But it's really tough without I stayed at work longer.
Yeah, I have an interesting story to tell you about that. We here in central New York, some years ago, while my kids were small, we had an ice storm, gigantic ice storm here that, I'll tell you about the story coming up in just a minute. Plus, some of the other top medical news stories of the week. We're talking about trauma after the storm. Some places are delaying Halloween, how not to eat your Halloween candy, and some Halloween safety tips for kids, what you should be telling parents about the kind of candy you're eating. That's coming up. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen. Stay with us. Thanks for listening.
Great Start Life Insurance, offered by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, ensures the insurability of your child. Now, what does that mean? Well, too often people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards precludes them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. By insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your child, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out about the rates and all the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com, enter the station's call letters, and as a thank you for applying, we'll give you a free non-insurance prescription discount card. Good for substantial savings on prescriptions and other medical tests. Keep and use the discount card even if you should cancel your Great Start Juvenile Life Insurance policy. The free discount card is not insurance, and discounts are available only at participating pharmacies. The discount medical plan organization providing this discount card is Vantage America Solutions, Inc. Ensure the insurability of your child and check out the Great Start Plan. Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois. Peace of mind. Now at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath.
Please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness.
It's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath. Cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only 1 in 5 girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now,
the words you say to her today,
can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together, we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. It's the time of year when colds and viruses begin making their rounds through schools and families. Sometimes parents will ask for antibiotics, believing they will shorten an illness, allowing their child to return to school or child care quicker. But antibiotics are not usually the answer. Antibiotics are powerful drugs that need to be used cautiously. Antibiotics have no effect on viruses and will not reduce the length of the illness or the symptoms. They are highly effective in treating bacterial infections such as strep throat or bacterial pneumonia. But overuse of antibiotics can make them less effective when truly needed. Some bacteria strains have become resistant to antibiotics as a result of antibiotic overuse. The best way to treat a viral infection is with rest, fluids, and TLC. So feel free to baby your child who has the cold or the flu. Give them lots of love and care, but save the antibiotics for when they are truly needed. And for more information on children's health, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schiff.
And now, back to Dr. Michael Roizen, Dr. Deb Lonser, and Joe Galewski on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Show Weekly brought to you by Morning and Night Multivitamins and YouBeauty.com. 34 past the hour, why do we eat what we eat, and what effect does advertising have on our eating habits? Coming up at 34 past the hour, Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week. Hour number one is coming up just before the end of hour number one. There are two Real Age Tips because this is a two-hour show. You can stream at gabradio.com and listen at radiomd.com. Just a quick story. Years ago, when my kids were smaller, I decided I went on a golf vacation 4 or 5 days with some friends to Virginia. It was in March. very, you know, you never know what you're going to get in March. You might get snow, you might get ice. So the day we left, it started to ice up, and we went to Virginia, and the ice storm was ridiculous at home in Syracuse. So my wife is home with our three kids. We had, the furnace was out, no power, but we did have a stove, a gas stove in the family room. And they stayed in the small family room addition for 5 days and blocked it off with a bed sheet to keep warm. The rest of the house was cold. So, you know, 4 or 5 days. So I'm coming back on a Sunday night.
So wait a second. You slept. They slept in the kitchen.
No, they slept in this a room addition, and they covered it, blocked it off with a bed sheet from the rest of the house, so the gas stove kept that room warm.
Oh, the room addition is where the gas stove was.
Yeah, the room addition was where the gas stove was. So they stayed in that room because the rest of the house was cold, 4 days without power. So we're coming home Sunday night from the golf outing, and I'm embarrassed to say this. As soon as we turned into my road, the power came on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
They were without power for 5 days.
So, and you fixed it just by driving home.
I'm in Virginia playing golf, and then as soon as we drive into our area, our development, the power came on. I did not feel too good. That was rough. But
well, would you have rather they kept suffering?
No, my point was I didn't have to bear the brunt of a four-day
power
outage.
Right, I'm
saying,
so the alternatives was, if you're feeling bad that you didn't bear it and they did, was, of course, you could have come home and they had no power still. Well, you could have sent your wife away and you could have taken care of the kids. I think it's better that the power came on.
Well, we took a bus. I mean, we didn't drive, you know, there's a group of about 20 of us who took a bus. There's no way for me to get home, that was ironic irony that the power comes on when I turned the corner to come into the development and didn't have to put up with a power outage for 4 days. It was just terrible. Let's get a flu update, because I think this is the time of year where we probably should weekly update our listeners on flu, where it is, severity, and what the potential is for what might lie ahead this winter.
Right. This is very interesting, because when you click on our flu update page, if you will, one of the most interesting components of this is, in fact, that the flu right now is as high as it was at its peak last year. We had a very mild flu season. Remember, we had our peak in late December, early January, and then it leveled off and never went to a real high peak the way it has in prior years with January, February, and March. Well, we're as high in October as the second highest flu season ever, and with only one flu season being higher than this one at this time of the year, and as high as we were at the peak last year. And right now in Louisiana, flu activity is high. In Georgia, it's pretty high. It is that way in Mississippi, in Texas, and in Alaska as well. And interestingly, the northern states, it's Minnesota. So we're getting an early, really big bump in flu. And if you're thinking about voting changes in Ohio, flu is already moderate, as it is in Florida.
Okay. And that changes week to week, probably, right?
It changes, literally, it's day to day. You know, Nevada is a low flu state. Colorado is a low flu state. So many of the other, Wisconsin is a low flu state. Iowa is a low flu state. Pennsylvania is low. So if you're thinking about how will this affect the election, it is only really Louisiana and Georgia and Alaska are very high. Texas is moderate. Now, I've got to say one other thing. The real reason you want to get the flu shot is it protects you against inflammation, generalized inflammation in the body. Now, there are some risks with the flu shot, but it's about 40,000 times as safe as risky. That is, for every person who comes down with something serious from the flu, it saves something serious in 40,000 people. So the risk-benefit ratio is tremendously in your favor for getting it. It's not absolutely safe, but it is much safer. You know, 40,000 to 1, that's a good odds to take. The other thing to note is one of the news stories this week was that the only vaccine we have to get yearly now is the flu, and that's because the endpoint, the H1N1, keeps evolving every year. They're now working on vaccines against different parts of the influenza virus, and maybe someday, meaning 5 years, five or more years from now, we'll have a flu vaccine that you only have to receive once and then get boosters every 10 years.
So what is the percentage, if they know that, of not getting the flu if you get the vaccine? You know?
You get a milder case almost every time, but about 73% of the people who get the flu vaccine don't get any symptoms, and about 27% get some, usually thought of as milder than they would have had. But there are some people, especially the elderly, who don't get any take. How do you increase your chances of having success with it? Get a good night's sleep beforehand and take a multivitamin for 7 days beforehand.
So I go to my doctor this week for my 6 months. I go every 6 weeks, the typical blood work, cholesterol, high blood pressure, you know, the whole thing, twice a year. And he asked me if I got the flu shot, and I said, yes, I got the flu shot a couple of weeks ago. And I just asked him about shingles vaccinations. I asked him, at his practice, are people getting the shingles vaccine? He goes, yes, people who have it covered by insurance. So people who don't have any insurance coverage aren't getting the vaccine. There's something, and I've always talked about this before, there's something wrong about that. You know, it's worth it to get it, but, you know, it's very expensive, and because it's so expensive, people aren't getting it, and they should get it. That's too bad.
Yeah, I agree.
It is, and it's one of the things that the preventive care maneuvers are one of the things that the new health law was supposed to correct. But yet, for this, it isn't mandated by the U.S. Preventive Task Force till over 65. When you look at the data, it looks to me like it should be over 50. We use it in our practice for people over 50, but many between 50 and 65 aren't covered. It is covered by Medicare, so obviously I think you should get it at that point, but in fact, many people don't get it.
Well, my doctor said that some Medicare programs, because there are different versions of Medicare coverage, some cover it, some don't.
Ah, okay. That may be. The ones in Ohio seem to cover it.
Right, yeah. So it's just too bad. The people are getting it, but the people who don't get it are the ones who have to pay for it, and they figure, you know, $200, $225 is pretty stiff. So
yeah, and the interesting thing is, obviously, if you get the shingles, and most of us who did not get the vaccinated against chickenpox will have a real shot at getting it. It is a painful and expensive condition from loss of time, loss of function. So I would tell you, if you're over 50, you should. This is one thing, $220 you should pay out of pocket because it is so valuable. Because if you get this, it is painful, it is disabling, and it's miserable.
Can it reoccur? If you get it once, can you get it again?
There are rare cases of reoccurrence, but it's very uncommon to reoccur.
Okay. We'll be back. It's guest time coming up, and we'll talk about fast food, food that a lot of people like to eat, and the effect of advertising on the food choices you make. Does food marketing need to make us fat? It's coming up next. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Tour de Cure, and it's more than just a bike ride. It's a celebration. It's where every turn of the pedal helps stop diabetes. Where cyclists of all levels come together to make a difference, to raise money, and to raise hope. It's the ride of your life. It's Tour de Cure. Register today at diabetes.org/tour. That's diabetes.org/tour.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Snowboarding is a popular winter sport. Snowboards look like big skateboards made from fiberglass and plastic. Snowboarders ride their boards much the way surfers do, steering by shifting their body weight. Most can reach speeds up to 40 miles per hour. Twice as many injuries happen to snowboarders as skiers. The most common injuries are to the wrist, usually when snowboarders use their arms to break a fall. The American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend this sport for children under age 7. For older children, make sure the snowboard fits the child. An easy way to determine this is to make sure the board stands no higher than the child's nose. Children should always wear helmets and gloves with built-in wrist guards, and they should resist trying advanced stunts or dangerous tricks until they've mastered all the basic snowboarding skills. And for more information on your child's health and safety, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
It's one thing to have a job in this economy, but it's another to have a career that you love. Getting the skills for today's careers may depend on your college degree. So if you're interested in the future of business, electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, call ITT Technical Institute today. With over 100 campuses nationally, ITT Tech can prepare you for a career in one of these fields. After all, tens of thousands of ITT Tech grads have built a solid future. Perhaps they can do the same for you. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. So what's stopping you? For more information and to schedule your campus tour, call ITT Tech toll-free at 800-574-1319. That's 800-574-1319. ITT Technical Institute, education for the future. 800-574-1319.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with Joe Galuski and Dr. Deb Lonser, and starring Dr. Michael Roizen, M.D.
All right, Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip for the first hour coming up in about 20 minutes. Ever seen a commercial on television that left you craving that hamburger or potato chips on the screen? These promoters, food marketers, are masters at getting people to get you to eat what they want you to eat. So does food marketing need to make us fat? Dr. Brian Wansick is our guest in the show today. He's at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. He's a professor in the field of consumer behavior and nutritional science. And we're going to talk about what draws people to certain foods and the effect of advertising, I guess, on our cravings. Dr. Wansick, thanks for joining us here today. I got a theory on this. Let me tell you what my theory is, because I have some background in advertising. These fast foods, these triple bypass Baconators and whatever, they're promoted. They're advertised on probably the most watched in the most desired times during a broadcast day. You've got Super Bowls and American Idol and millions of people watching these TV shows. Promotion of healthy foods, fruits and vegetables, they're considered as filler in odd hours in the form of public service announcements when most people aren't watching TV. I mean, could you advertise healthy foods in prime time and be as successful? My theory, I could be wrong.
Sure.
That's what I think.
Well, you can. You see, are the
the profit margins in healthy foods that can enable them to be promoted there. And if you're selling an orange, probably not. But there's a lot of healthy things out there, whether it be Healthy Choice or whether it be some of the healthier lines of even fast foods that can be profitable to advertise and do have somebody behind there that would benefit from spending $1 million in a commercial. But, you know, the orange grower down in the middle of California who's going to advertise an orange doesn't have $1 million to do it.
The visual of a triple bacon cheeseburger is so so sexy. Sure. That's what I'm saying. The visual of an orange or a carrot, you know, not so much. It's not as eye appealing as this fast food junk is.
Yeah, well, there's a few things to keep in mind. Is that advertising is only one of the four major ways that a company can encourage somebody to eat an unhealthy product. But it's also one of four ways that a company can help people to eat healthier, higher margin products. They make a whole lot more money when they sell a salad with grilled chicken on than the Baconator, in the case of some cases. So they can use some of the same tools to move them in that direction. And as with the triple bypass Baconator, as you mentioned, you know, oftentimes when they come out with these really, really extreme, strange sandwiches like that, they're not even really intended to sell a lot of them. What they're intended to do is to gain your attention and say, hey, you know, I haven't thought about chain X for a long time. Hey, let me try that out. Now, they don't necessarily order the triple bypass Baconator when they get there, but what it does is it brings new enthusiasm and new interest to that chain that might have waned over the years and people let it drift from mind.
Right. Here's Dr. Mike. Hey, Dr. Mike.
Brian, as you say, there are four things, and in the article, Does Food Marketing Need to Make Us Fat? A Review and Solutions, that you wrote and that we're talking about today, you talk about product, price, promotion, and place, the four P's, if you will.
Yeah.
Let me ask you what you think would happen at the Cleveland Clinic in our cafeterias, now our employee and visitor cafeterias. We sell a hamburger and a bean burger that, in fact, I can't tell the difference in taste between the hamburger. It's on a whole grain roll. That's really the only difference in taste, and 100% whole grain. And the bean burger and a hamburger right now are $3 each. And we sell, of the total of the two things we sell, roughly 28% are bean burgers and 72% are hamburgers. If we lower the price on the bean burger by 30%, keep the price on the hamburger the same, so it's still selling for $3, but lower the price to, say, $2.30 on the, or $2.10 on the bean burger, how many more of those will we sell? Since you, in the article you make the point that price is the most important.
No. I would say you're going to sell close to zero more of those. You can make it 50%. You're going to sell close to zero more. The people who want them for $3 are buying them for $3. The key here is not to try to bribe people into buying something that they may see right now as inferior. The key is to, first of all, make them increase their perception of what the taste expectations will be, and also to actually put it up first in their choice set. So it's something to consider first and not like as this you know, second cousin alternative to what they really want, a hamburger. So the first thing I'd do is I would put it first on the menu. That's the first thing they see. It's not down there after the tofu salad. It's the first thing they see in the menu. And I wouldn't call it a bean burger. Geez, I mean, that sounds appetizing even to me. I think it's something a very different way to call it. Give it an evocative name. Western barbecue
sex
vegetable
burger.
Patty.
Western sex
I'm
burger.
Sorry?
Yeah. He said Western sex burger.
Well, something like that. Something that makes it sound a little bit different, a little bit more enticing. Okay. And I did it, but there's a million ways you can do it. You can call it, you know, depending on where it's made, you can call it a California burger, you know, depending on whether you put a squirt of barbecue sauce on it. You can call it a Western, you know, bacon burger. Western bean burger.
The Ohio strength. We'll call it the Ohio strength burger.
Okay, there we go.
And you've used this concept in schools, right, and have had success with it.
Amazing success in schools. We started something at the Cornell, and this is nationwide, called the Smarter Lunchroom Movement. What we found is that you can get kids to eat healthier, to make a healthier choice, not by eliminating the cookie off the menu. You do that, they just don't eat lunch there. You can do this by making small changes to the lunchroom, to the way things are promoted, the way they're merchandised, the way they're ordered. When we find that a child is 11% more likely, this is a high schooler, is 11% more likely to take the first vegetable they see in line than the third vegetable. So whatever you end up putting first in line, make it sure it's the healthiest thing, because it's going to bump up the chance that they take it. We find you do something, an evocative name. And actually, it's interesting to see Bean Burger. We did this big thing for MTV did a shoot for us a while back. In one of these schools, we changed the name of a bean burrito, which just, you know, it sells three bean burritos like every day they sell it, you know. We changed the name to a Big Bad Bean Burrito, which is admittedly a really stupid name.
Yeah.
But what happens, they sell out almost every day.
Wow.
So making these small changes. But it doesn't involve changing the price at all. It involves either changing a person's taste expectations or how fun they think it's going to be.
Well, but you do in this article say the price is the strongest driver. Are you telling me that it isn't now?
You see, it's the strongest driver, everything else being equal. But in the case of a bean burrito and a beef burger, everything else isn't equal. One, I say I'm going to be satisfied. The other, I'm going to say, geez, I'm taking a hit from health, but I'm not going to like my lunch.
Okay, so now let's just go over 70% of the food we serve in the cafeteria or make available is, quote, healthy already. So it's only 30% of the choices are unhealthy. So they're surrounded by, if you will, healthy choices. When we come back, you're going to have to tell me, other than name, what can we do? We'll be right back, Joe.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Mike. Dr. Brian Wansick is our guest here today. We're talking about food marketing and how it directly affects some of the eating choices we do make. Dr. Wansick is at Cornell University. He's a professor in the field of consumer behavior and nutritional science. If you have any questions for our guest or topic or anything along the way, udocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com. And stay with us for more of our guest and topic coming up on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen.
Not an offer to sell a franchise. The offer of a franchise can only be made through the delivery of a franchise disclosure document.
How would you like to have your own money-making, fresh, healthy vending franchise? The company that has revolutionized the vending machine business with healthy snacks and drinks has done it again with the world's only combination gourmet organic espresso coffee healthy snack vending machine. These brightly colored, high-tech, dual-temperature control vending machines will be placed in premier locations in your community. Businesses, hospitals, schools, military bases, health clubs, and other high-traffic areas. Fully stocked with fresh, healthy foods like yogurts, organic espresso coffee, 100% fruit juices, smoothies, granola bars, and other popular brand name healthy and organic snacks. Consumers demand these kinds of healthy foods, and that's why franchise areas are getting gobbled up across the nation. A highly profitable business for you with full training and support. Plus, Fresh Healthy Vending secures premier locations for your machines on your behalf. Call now, 800-226-5454. Get information on how to own your own groundbreaking Fresh Healthy Vending franchise today. 800-226-5454. 800-226-5454.
Downsized, outsourced, pink slipped? Afraid of losing your home? Forbes magazine named our company one of the top 10 business ideas of 2012, where ordinary people are creating extraordinary incomes.
Hi, I am Elena from Miami. I was a traditional business owner with all the headaches that come with that. But I replaced that multiple franchise income working from home full time, and I spent all the time I want with my son.
Get out of the rat race. Work from home and start earning great money as soon as next week.
Hi, David from from Boston. I was in the real estate industry for 12 years when the bottom completely fell out of that business. I really had my back against the wall with five young kids depending on me. I've now been in this business for less than a full year, and I'm actually better off today, income-wise, than I was in my best year ever in real estate.
Go to OneOccupyWealth.com now and change your life today. That's the number OneOccupyWealth.com. OneOccupyWealth.com. Start earning great money as soon as next week.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize a message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes, March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours, all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. While planning gifts for your children, grandchildren, nieces, and nephews this holiday season, don't forget about toy safety. Toys need to match a child's abilities, so always check the manufacturer's age recommendations on the toy first. In general, toy parts should be much larger than the child's mouth to prevent injuries, including choking. To avoid serious eye or ear injuries, steer clear of toys that shoot small objects into the air or make loud noises. The eyes, nose, and other small parts on soft toys and stuffed animals should be securely fastened. If a toy comes with instructions, make sure you read and demonstrate them to the child and make sure she understands the proper way to use the toy. And note, never buy hobby kits such as chemistry sets for any child younger than 12. For more tips on keeping your holidays safe with your children and family, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Brian Wasik is a Cornell professor, field of consumer behavior and nutritional science. He's our guest. We're talking about the influence of marketing on food. Let me just mention, Brian, that the schools here in central New York, the kids are throwing healthy food out. They're getting it, and they're throwing it into the garbage can. And kids are making black market money on the foods kids like to eat.
Well, that's unfortunate. One of the things that is going on in the U.S. Department of Agriculture, there are all these changes that were recommended in school lunch patterns. And I'll be going down to Washington, D.C. at 1:30 on Monday, because one of the things that USDA has funded in our research is how can schools prevent this from happening. Now, those schools in central New York did nothing. They just changed the food, and that's what happened. What other schools have been doing is what has been recommended, which is along with those changes in what's offered, give them evocative, attractive names, put the fruit instead of in a chafer pan under a sneeze shield, put it out where it's obvious in a nice bowl. In some cases, if they want to even brand some of the foods by calling it the name or mascot of the school, we find that even then it causes kids to take more vegetables and eat more vegetables.
I like that idea.
It doesn't have much of an impact with fruit, we found. We did this in quite a few different schools, and we haven't found a big impact with fruit, but it influences vegetables a lot.
All right. Hey, Dr. Mike.
Brian, one of the things you mentioned here, some of the very interesting things, you said that when people are looking for discounts to buy more food, and they do buy food relating to discounts of their usual food they eat, when they're eating indulgent food, they want, if you will, bigger discounts. And when they're eating healthful food, they want they go for bigger packages, which seems a little weird to me. Am I interpreting that right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, one of the things that's going on with the indulgent foods, those would be, you know, like the cookies or the cream cheesecake or, you know, whatever you're ordering at a restaurant. If people want a lower price, it ends up being because they want essentially an additional rationalization why they're being a bad boy or a bad girl. And in their mind, not necessarily logically, but in their mind, they can say, oh, Jesus, it's such a great deal, I couldn't pass it up.
Right.
So, go ahead.
Well, in the case of healthy food, and healthy food is almost, we find it similar to food that isn't quite as good, but is still tastes okay, with less attractive foods, let's say, that people still think are okay, they want more for their money because they want to compensate for eating something they don't like quite as much, but eating a little bit more.
Now,
it's
one of the things... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's like when you go to a restaurant. If it's a really great restaurant and the food's really great, you don't really feel you need that much to eat that much food for it to be worth the money. You go to a slightly less good restaurant, and you want more food for your money.
One of the things I noted is that when I am eating out, people... say, why are you having that piece of salmon or something? And I love salmon. So there are different taste preferences that obviously influence things, and a lot of it is historic. So if you had asked me probably 25 years ago, before I had learned to cook salmon a whole bunch of different ways, I would have said, oh, I want that piece of beef. But now I would go for a piece of salmon way more than a piece of beef, or even a salad with salmon on it. How does this happen? Why do we develop tastes over a period of years, and how fast does it happen, Brian?
You know, it happens very gradually, but it also happens based on your memory of how good that last piece of that food was compared to your last piece of liquid beef. Now, and I admit, I eat salmon patties very often in the morning because of you, and but you also told me how to make salmon patties correctly. I wasn't doing it before. And it's my preferred meat in the morning.
Yeah, mine too. Obviously.
Yeah, but
you know that. Yeah. Since I cooked it for you.
That's right. But if we look at let's say, going to a restaurant for dinner, most people might prefer steak more than salmon because the memories they have of steak, you know, perhaps as far as growing up, were... When they had steak growing up, they associated it with somebody really spoiling them, and, you know, really taking care of them, really giving them attention, you know, perhaps a mother, for instance. Their memories of salmon might more likely have been, you know, getting in a restaurant one time, or, you know, maybe at a banquet when there wasn't any other choice. And so it might have been a positive experience, but it's not as emotionally and it evocatively as powerful as
my salmon with garlic and red pepper on it.
It is, but that is great for breakfast.
Now, before you go, you've done a lot with what I would call the school lunch marketing. What's the website where we can learn more about that? A number of our listeners have already emailed in and said, tell me the website again, and I, of course, didn't write it down.
Yeah, it's smarterlunchrooms.org. Smarterlunchrooms.org.
So smarterlunchrooms, LUNCHROOMS.org.
.org. Yeah, and it's already been, and what it is it's changes you can make for under $50 in your school or the school your children go to that can help kids make better choices without taking choice away from them.
Right, because that's so important.
Yeah, and we've got it already. It's in 14,000 schools across the United States. Next year, we're going into every school in Michigan, and we're starting with Southern Ohio at the same time.
What about Cleveland?
Well, we've changed the food but we made it tasty food in Cleveland, Akron, and the Inner Ring schools. So they're already changed. At the elementary level. We haven't done the high school level yet.
But, you know, and that's great. And that's the first start. The second step ends up being to realize that it's not nutrition until it's eaten. It's got to be set up. The lunchroom has to be set up and designed, or, I mean, just rearranged in some cases with the right signage, the right point of purchase, sort of prompts to get kids to take that healthy thing.
I was watching a YouTube video, and a lunch lady said the same exact thing. She was complaining about how kids were just throwing all of the food away and that all of these changes were so stupid because none of the kids were going to eat any of the food, and that nutrition, the kids won't get proper nutrition by throwing their food away in the garbage can.
Yeah, but there's very easy changes that people can make. You know, if you go to a fast food restaurant and you order, let's say, a hamburger and a Diet Coke, what are they going to ask you?
do they get fries with it?
Yes, seriously. Do you want fries with that? But what school lunch worker says to a kid who picks up a piece of pizza, hey, do you want some salad with that?
Well, none of us. Well, we can get roasted. We can get roasted sweet potato.
Excellent.
Roasted sweet potato fries. Joe.
We'll be back.